Hey, what's going on, everybody? I'm Jacob Cozy Pat, and welcome back to my podcast, Keepin' Cozy. Throughout my college career, I've spent lots of time talking with many different established professionals and having meaningful conversations about current events, their industries, and the many different life experiences that shaped who they are today. Now, as I go along my journey, I want to share these conversations with you to help you keep calm and achieve greater clarity in an uncertain world. This is Keepin' Cozy. Our guest for this week is Father James Martin. He was born in Pennsylvania and went to the Wharton School of Business for his undergraduate degree. Upon graduating, he moved to Manhattan, where he worked in finance for GE Capital. But finding himself dispassionate for the corporate world, he was inspired by the monk, Thomas Merton, to become a member of the clergy, and he became a Jesuit priest. He has since become the Pope's Secretariat of Communications, a New York Times best-selling author, a guest and chaplain of the Comedy Central's Colbert Report, and is currently the editor-at-large for The America magazine. How are you keeping? You mentioned that you had carpal tunnel syndrome and you're unable to visit your physical therapist. And beyond that, how are you just finding ways to keep up with, you know, the free time?
Yeah, I have carpal tunnel, and it's pretty mild, so it's not a big deal. I kind of manage it. I'm much more concerned about people like my mom, who's 88 and in a retirement community, my elderly Jesuit brothers. You know, we lost a lot of Jesuits in Philadelphia, for example, you probably know. And then right around the corner is Mount Sinai Hospital, where certainly more recently, I would say, it's gotten a little better, but you know, about a month ago, it was really grim. And I open my window every morning and can see out and see the windows of the patients. So I'm fine. It's just I feel a kind of heaviness that I think most people in the country feel, particularly New Yorkers, and I'm sure you feel the same on Long Island. But I'm fine physically. I'm okay.
Yeah. How is it not being able to visit your physical therapist and being unable to write?
It's okay. I mean, I don't want to make too much out of it. I'm able to write a little less than I was able to before, but I can still type. I just had to be careful. So without getting into the details, you know, there's certain kind of things that I need to do, like swim, and that helps. But I mean, I'm okay. You know, I can manage.
Sure. And are you just finding ways to keep busy? I know you mentioned you have a Facebook Live later, and you know, you helped me out by coming on this podcast, but in general, how are you keeping busy with the free time?
I'm extremely busy. You know, most of the work that I do is writing, and I'm still able to write and research. I'm working on a book on Lazarus. That's my main thing. But I still do all the social media stuff that I was doing beforehand. I'm editor at large at America Media, so I participate in America stuff. And then I have more people calling about, just struggles with the coronavirus and the quarantine than before. So ironically, with a lot of people out of work and with more free time, I get more phone calls from people who, you know, tend to have more time on their hands and maybe need some counseling. And but my job hasn't diminished. So I'm really busy. I think I'm busier, actually.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, thank you for finding the time to come on this podcast.
Pleasure. Anything for BC.
So kind of on the note of just churches, what do you think is going to happen to churches post COVID-19? One with getting attendees back to mass, and then also the financial struggles that a lot of churches are facing now.
Those are two very good questions. And the answer is something you generally don't hear from a Jesuit, which is, I'm not sure. In terms of getting people back, you know, I think there's a great hunger for people, Catholics and non-Catholics, I mean, Jews, Muslims, everybody to congregate again. And we're naturally social beings. And so we want to be worshiping together. By the same token, I think there's a bit of a rush going on, especially in the Catholic Church, for opening churches again. I mean, my whole life is centered around the Mass and the Eucharist. And I'm sure you met a lot of Jesuits at BC who would say the exact same thing, all the Jesuits. But this rush, really, I think, is going to endanger lives. And I think you're going to see, you know, with the next few weeks, people opening up parishes, you're going to see more people, you know, priests and lay people getting sick. And rabbis and congregants and imams and, their congregation. So I'm kind of wary of people going against public health warnings, basically. I mean, I think, you know, we're not epidemiologists, you know, church leaders are not epidemiologists. So I'm not sure what it's going to look like. Financially, I think you're right. It's also very difficult. You know, collections aren't happening. I mean, people are giving things online. But I wonder what it's going to look like. I wonder if, you know, there are two forces at work, basically. There's this great desire for people to come back, right? Everybody wants to go back to church. And then once they get there, they're going to realize, oh my gosh, I don't want to be sitting 1 foot away from somebody.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know. I really don't know what's going to happen. I think overall it's going to diminish the number of people that go. My thought.
Yeah, well, that's unfortunate, especially for someone whose, you know, life is centered around the church.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there are so many Catholics who are just so longing for that connection. And, you know, just, you know, to be with one another and to hear the gospel and to hear a good homily and the music. And even music, I don't know if you've been following this very carefully, but I mean, I do because I have to. Singing in a choir, and singing is apparently like one of the worst things for the spread of the virus. Now, I'm not, as I said, I'm not an epidemiologist, but I'm not Dr. Fauci. But apparently singing, and certainly being in a choir and singing, you know, with, for all the choir members. And so, you know, some people are saying we may not have choirs for the next year.
Yeah.
So that's also sad too.
Yeah. Especially when we're all waiting for the vaccine.
So, yeah, exactly. And who knows when that's going to come.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess kind of just to continue on your work as a Jesuit, you know, you famously call for being a contemplative in action, or I guess the Jesuit order in general calls for being a contemplative in action. How do you do that in a time where it's like almost defined by inaction?
That's a very good insight. Yeah, most of us are kind of forced to be monks now. I mean, we ran an article in American Media called We're All Monks Now. I mean, you know, this is kind of a monastic existence for people. You're cloistered, basically, which means, you know, quarantine, kind of set away, set apart. You're in one place, so monks take a vow of stability. You're not going outside. You're not. So, frankly, I think it's a little easier. I mean, it's easier to be a contemplative in action when there's not a whole lot of action. I think the invitation is to find God in, and I hope you heard this when you were at BC, you know, to find God in all things, right? And that's not just, you know, in church services and in prayer, but in relationships, in the challenges that come your way, and even small things, you know, like going out for a walk in nature, right? So it's trying to find God in all things, which is a Jesuit ideal.
Yeah. But I guess, like, do you ever find yourself like thinking of things that you wish you could do and just not being able to do them because of, you know, all of the restrictions and just general health scare?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, you know, even just like visiting friends. One of the ways that I recreate is, you know, going out to dinner, you know, with friends, and can't do that. I think I really do miss celebrating Mass and going to Mass. I miss some, you know, just hanging out with people and going to the office. So it's a kind of, the other thing that makes it monastic is the kind of asceticism.
Yeah.
Right. You're denying yourself certain things, but, you know, it's very much like when you're sick, or, I mean, you may be too young to experience this, but, you know, if you ever have a long-term illness or you're in the hospital and the doctor says you can't do X, Y, Z, let's say you break your leg or something.
Yeah.
And the doctor says, look, you can't run. You just have to not run. Right. I mean, so it's a kind of asceticism in that way.
Yeah. So I guess speaking of asceticism and being a monk, what do you think the famous Thomas Merton would say about this period of time?
I'm sure you have a lot of good questions. I'm sure he'd have a lot to say. He said a lot about everything. You know, I think he would invite us to see this as a kind of monasticism and to learn. You know, he was very big on learning from what he would call the desert fathers, so the early monks, and you know, some of the wisdom of monks, you know, from the Middle Ages and before. So he'd probably have a lot of wisdom for us about what it means to live monastically and how to do that well, right? One of the things that people talk about is, you know, for example, having a what's called an ordo, O-R-D-O, like an order or a schedule, basically, for your life. and for your day, so you don't just wake up and it's aimless. You know what I mean? A lot of my friends are saying, I don't know what to do. I wake up and there's nothing to do. And, you know, monks in a hermitage like Merton was, have like a schedule.
Yeah.
I make breakfast. I do this. I clean the house. I do my spiritual reading. I do my prayer. I go for a walk. I think that's helpful for people. And so Merton would probably say we could learn a lot from the monks.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. So just transitioning to the second part of the podcast, which is more focused on career advice, and I guess specifically with you, it's going to be a little bit more about your vocation. I have to start out by asking, you notably left the corporate world to become a priest. The first thing I want to know is, did you ever regret or have fear of leaving behind the life of money and prestige that comes along with like working at GE Capital, and then it's the obvious choice to go there after going to school like Wharton? And stuff like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't want to say, be crazy to say, I didn't miss anything. I mean, there's some things that I missed. I missed having, a lot of disposable income, what I really missed? I missed buying like expensive gifts for people. So if I would go to a wedding or for someone's birthday, I just go and buy something expensive for them. I can't do that any longer.
Yeah.
Truly, business is a real vocation for people. And, when I was in Wharton, I thought it was for me. And I just, I never really had anyone say to me, what would you really like to do? What are you made for?
Yeah.
What do you think God has in mind for you? I mean, no one said that at Wharton, that's for sure. And so when I got into GE, I was initially very excited. It was the early to mid 80s, right? I graduated in 1982. So
yeah,
you're familiar with the term yuppie, right? Young urban professional. So I was definitely a yuppie. We all said we weren't because it was kind of pejorative, but I was young, I was living in New York and I was a professional. Yeah. I was making a lot of money. So it was exciting. But then eventually I just started to realize I'm in the wrong place. Like I was kind of bored and I didn't like it. And so I stumbled upon, our friend Thomas Merton, and then that led to the Jesuits. But really it was not only about going towards the Jesuits, it was also about getting out of corporate America.
Yeah.
So part of me wanted out. And it wasn't as if I was pining for that. I was so happy.
Why'd you want to leave corporate America?
It just wasn't for me. So, I think back then I would have said, oh, it's terrible. It's it's cutthroat, and it was all about money, and that's how I saw it, and that was the environment that I was in at the time, right? That's how I saw it as a young man. So I was 27. It wasn't for me.
Yeah.
And I part of it was I started to find it boring, right? Just talking about GE's bottom line.
Yeah.
Part of it was that I didn't really see that it was something that I wanted to contribute to. I mean, at the end of the day, do I really want to, is my life all about making GE Capital have more money?
Yeah.
That to me didn't make sense. Now, again, it's a real vocation for a lot of people. And a lot of people, my friends are, some of them are still working for GE. although recently, GE's kind of, taking another dive. In any event, it just wasn't for me. I felt like a square peg in a round hole. So it was time to get out.
No, I totally relate to this because I went to the business school at BC. So, and I guess one of the things I started to feel more and more as I was there was just a bit of restlessness, doing the business studies and whatnot. And you talk a lot about restlessness, and, Augustine and Charles Bukowski famously talk about it. Augustine talks about it with a restlessness of the soul, I am restless until I rest in thee, to God. But then with Charles Bukowski, I don't know if you've ever read his poem, The Blackbird.
He's fascinating. I'm curious what he has to say about restlessness.
His is he worked as a post office worker for most of his life.
Yeah.
And he was just, I guess it was that form of restlessness that just brewed within him until he started writing his poetry. And his famous poem, I don't know if it's Bluebird or Blackbird, I forgot, but it's about having a bird that's caged within him. And that bird for him was his creative desire to be a writer. So did you feel that when you were in corporate America?
Yeah, that's another insightful question. I felt bored. I felt stressed. It was pretty stressful. Working long hours and weekends and go, 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 very cutthroat. And I also didn't feel like there was a way out because, you know, again, when I was in college at Wharton, now it's very different now. And I would hope it's different at BC. You know, there's much more talk about your vocation and what you want, yeah. What you made for. Back then, honestly, it was about getting the highest paying job you could get. That was it. You know, you wanted to go into Goldman Sachs or, I mean, at the time, you know, Lehman Brothers, Salomon Brothers, GE, you know, the big eight accounting firms. Now I think they're down to big four.
Yeah.
In any event. So I was, you know, at the time, I just thought this isn't for me. I couldn't have articulated, oh, this is what I really want to do until I came into contact with Mert. And I thought, well, that seems like a really beautiful way to live. Yeah. So that's what it was. It was kind of an attraction to that way of life. And I think, you know, God works through our desires that way.
Yeah.
But I certainly didn't see, say, oh, I'm this creative soul that needs to be free. I didn't think of myself in those terms, frankly.
Yeah, well, I guess you are a writer, right? So one of the things that comes along with that, I think Charles Bukowski didn't really receive it too much during his life. But with you, you've started to gain some, you know, I guess, attention to both your writing and then your overall ministry. First, I want to ask, do you ever feel imposter syndrome when you go and speak on like the Colbert Show or just, you know, people like my dad listen to you every single night, your daily examines, stuff like that? What is that like?
No, you know, because I know it's just me. I mean, and it's just, you know, I have a good sense of my own limitations and I don't try to pretend to be anything that I'm not, you know. And, you know, as a Jesuit, it's different because it's not about advancing yourself or your career. It's about, you know, proclaiming the gospel, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like I'm saying, oh, you know, here I am. I'm this great spiritual master. You must all listen to me and follow me and, you know, whatever. And I just, that's not the way I approach it. I approach it in terms of, you know, let me talk to you about Jesus. Let me talk to you about God. So, the imposter syndrome, I think, is real for people, but I would imagine it's more for people who are trying to, in a sense, advance their career, which I'm not. I mean, I don't. It's more about the proclamation of the gospel. So, yeah. I mean, I feel other things when I do stuff on TV, like I hope I don't say something stupid.
Yeah. Do you feel anxiety and stuff when you go on?
Not anymore.
Okay.
I feel about as nervous as I am with you, which is not very nervous. My one problem is I tend to say, and you know, a lot.
Yeah.
But again, you know, first of all, you get used to it. You know, as I'm sure people say to you, do you ever get nervous about doing these podcasts? You would say, you know, I'm getting used to it now and it's not that big of a deal.
I totally get nervous about doing these podcasts. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that comes with time.
Yeah.
Part of it is also recognizing that you're going to make mistakes and that you don't know everything.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, so I don't know. You know, someone asked me a question about XYZ. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's not about me putting myself forward as this big expert.
Yeah.
So for example, if I were trying to, if I were like a politician or if I were, you know, trying to convince someone to vote for me, or maybe it would be different. I'd feel more pressure, but
yeah,
I just don't. And, you know, I also know that some people are going to approve of me. Some people are not.
Yeah.
All right. That comes with age too.
Well, specifically on that topic, right. You know, one of the things that I think, you know, has gotten a lot of, you know, headlines is the fact that you did make a very firm stance on LGBTQ rights and you've taken a bit of a pushback for that. What is it like just, you know, realizing that some of the people who you're spreading the gospel for dislike you just because of your fundamental belief?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things I should say is one of the most welcoming places has been, for me, has been BC. And I was up there, I think a year or two ago, in what is it, Robsham Theater? I never know how to pronounce that name.
Robsham.
Robsham, thank you.
Yeah.
Theater, you know, to give a talk on that. So, you know, felt very welcome by Father Leahy. You know, most people are very open to it, right? You know, I've been in, parishes in Boston and across the country and even overseas.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are some people that don't like it. And at the beginning, it was a little surprising. you know, the and what would happen is like personal attacks.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just we don't like what you're saying. It's you're awful. You're a heretic. You're an apostate. And then worse names. You know, you're a pansy. You're this. You're that. But eventually, I realized not everybody's going to like me.
Yeah.
And not everybody liked Jesus. Yeah. And that's okay. And so, you know, in the Jesuits, we call it the grace of indifference, the sort of freedom to, you know, to be free of the need to be liked or loved or approved of.
What was that word again?
Indifference.
Oh, indifference. Okay, yeah.
Jesuit indifference, it's called. Yeah.
Indifference. Okay, cool. Yeah. So I guess just the last question would be, do you have any general advice for the class of 2020, people like me who are graduating into an extremely uncertain world?
Yeah, I would say a couple things. First of all, I hope that the Jesuits taught you this or someone taught you guys this, you know, discernment, which is listening to where God is in your life. And generally speaking, I would say in these days, the voice of God is the voice of calm in your life.
Yeah.
Calm, hope, trust, courage, right? It's a very gentle voice, like you can do it. And the voice that's not coming from God is kind of panic.
Yeah.
Panic is never coming from God. Terror, fear, those kinds of things. Obviously, you know, you need to take precautions and you can be concerned about things and, you know, you can get sad and worried about things, but panic is not coming from God. So the first thing, discernment of spirits. The second thing is to use the examination of conscience.
Yeah.
Which is that Jesuit prayer of just sort of seeing where God is, you know, in your day. Because otherwise you get so focused on kind of the problems, you miss all the blessings. But, you know, my overall advice to young people like yourself is to be who you are, right? Is to remember that God calls you to be someone special, right? And it's not so much about making money and impressing people. It's just allowing God to sort of to form you into the person you're meant to be. And that's a lifelong process, right? And to do what you find enjoyable and what you desire.
Yeah.
And not to try to get people to like you. Truly, I spent most of my 20s and 30s, probably my teenage years, trying to get people to like me, you know, think I'm cool or whatever. And that's useless.
Yeah.
So to kind of let go of that, you know, and just be yourself. I mean, it's pretty basic. It takes a while to learn, though.
Yeah. Well, how did you come into your personal maturity?
You know, I think the Jesuits had a lot to do with it. My Jesuit formation and training, you know, some therapy, you know, from time to time, some retreats. But, you know, also that's a really good question. You're asking very good questions. I think, you know, one of the main ways is realizing that I just couldn't get everybody to like me.
Yeah.
You know, so it'd be like saying, you know, what I'm trying to think of another metaphor. It'd be like saying, what led you to realize, I was just up in my rooftop garden, so this is an easy thing to say. What led you to realize that, you know, planting a certain kind of plant and not watering it wasn't working? You're like, well, I didn't water and they died, you know? So it's kind of, you know, you learn by experience. And no matter how many times you try to get people to like you or love you or approve of you, you know, it's just not going to happen. Sometimes if you try to force it, you know, it's even worse. So just to be yourself and to let people who like you and let people who don't like you and not to be too worried about it. Truly, I mean, I think for people in your generation, the overriding desire is to be thought cool, you know, and on top of stuff and he's got it all together or, you know, or good looking or athletic or whatever the kind of adjective you sort of most desire or popular. There's another, popular. And that's useless. That first of all, there's always going to be someone who seems more popular or more good looking or more athletic or more successful or more cool. I think that's the general rubric than you are. And, you know, in their own minds, they don't see that at all.
Sure.
Right. We tend to think that our life, this is the other thing, that our life is kind of a mixed bag. So you, Jacob, know the pluses and minuses of your life, right? You know all the pluses and you know all the minuses. When you look at someone else who seems to have it all together, you think, oh my gosh, there's nothing wrong with their life. And so you compare what you know is your kind of mixed bag life, which with what seems like their perfect life, but it's not. And so you always lose out. So that's part of it. Part of it is this kind of comparison. In the Jesuits, we have an expression, compare and despair. That's part of it too. So all those things help me to get to at least a little more peace in my life.
Well, thank you for your time and for agreeing to be part of this podcast.
My pleasure, and congratulations on graduating from a great school.
Thank you. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening. I thought it was great to get Father Martin's perspective on quarantine, and I think we can all benefit from adapting some of the qualities of the monks during these times. Though it was very unsettling to hear about the uncertainty surrounding the church's future. On the career side of things, we got a bit more insight as to why he felt a calling to join the priesthood, and his maturing past the desire to want to impress others. I think that's a lesson we can all learn from. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you're keeping cozy.